And what's up to another episode of Knights at the Round Table. It is a beautiful Wednesday night and we are going live here and I am with McKenna Shaw. Super grateful that you showed up today. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Of course. And we're going to dive right in because we did a story in asking people like, hey, you know, what were you interested in for us to talk about? And for them, and surprisingly to me, it was a lot of people said Mormonism. And I was like, oh man, out of all the religions, out of all the whatever. And I'm like super curious now as to why. So you are an ex-Mormon?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Word for it.
Okay, an ex-Mormon. So I want to know your tale. Like, how did it, you said you were born into it, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
So tell me your quick, your process. Like, what happened? What got you into it? How did it unfold?
Yeah, so I was born into it. So I was actually born into a family where my mom was a devout Mormon and my dad was not. And so that's kind of my start into it. She really wanted to raise us kids as Mormon just because that was something that was really important to her. And so there are 9 kids in my family.
Oh, snap.
I'm the third. And yeah, so I was born into it. So I kind of did all the typical Mormon kid things, you know, like...
Wait, what are the typical Mormon things?
I will tell you.
Okay.
3-hour services on Sundays. There's the sacrament, is what they call it, sacrament meeting.
Okay.
Then there is another one where you go, either like if you're an elementary age, you go to what's called primary. I can't remember what it's called when you're... once you reach middle school, but you go off, you divide into your grade levels and you're with kids that are your own age. And then you have at the end of that, once you're a teenager, you have what's called young women's and then, or young men's if you're a guy. And so yeah, 3-hour Sundays, definitely the, all capris. That was very important. No shoulders, nothing like that.
Okay.
no coffee, no tea.
Wait, why no coffee, no tea?
So Mormons have what's called Word of Wisdom. It's kind of a separate, another book, but it has different like ways to live your life in accordance with like health things. So mm-hmm. You're not supposed to have like having coffee as a Mormon would be like, it's in, like breaking the Ten Commandments.
Oh, it'd be, like, snap.
Very sinful. It'd be very sinful. Like no alcohol, no tobacco. Yeah. To have anything like that would be like, you're in a state of sin.
Is it because it's a stimulant?
I mean, there's a lot of people who get into, we don't really know.
Really?
Like the whole history of why they said none of that. But it's just, you're just not supposed to have it. Sundays, Sabbath is pretty important. Absolutely no shopping, really no going outside of the house. I know some people who will go on like walks or hikes or things like that. But yeah, when I was little, there was so much taught about the Sabbath. And if you went to the grocery store, that's scandalous, you know.
Dang.
Things like that. Yeah, I remember one time when I was in primary and so I was in, I probably would have been in like third grade. And my dad wasn't Mormon, so he would sometimes, you know, take us to the store. And I was a kid, so I'm like, I'm just going to go with him to the store. And I remember my primary teacher was there that had talked about how horrible it was to shop on Sunday. And we saw her at the store.
Oh.
Yeah, I was kind of just like, look at each other. We're not going to say anything, you know, go back out. Yeah, so those are kind of some different things. I always felt like, I actually like looked at this last night, but Mormons view God's love is conditional. Mm. So you have to be actively like attempting to, you almost receive love to the degree that you are willing to put in.
Mm.
And so, yeah, love was conditional. So I always felt like God was really far away, very distant, you know, slap on the hand.
Yeah.
If I did something wrong. And my thinking, especially when I was young, I thought of God very much in a formula of like X squared plus B squared will equal this. This will happen. If I do these things, then God will do these things.
Yeah.
But a huge part of my upbringing too was just that my dad was not a member. And so that was almost in a sense in my community, pretty scandalous.
How did that work though? Like, did your mom meet him before becoming Mormon?
So she was raised Mormon. She just really met him, fell in love with him, and she just knew that he was the one for her.
Oh, wow.
But it's a huge deal for Mormons to be both, or Mormon couples to be married in the temple, and because that is how, so Mormons also have what's three different kingdoms of heaven. And so you have to be married in the temple to reach the highest kingdom. And then you can also bring your kids with you if they also, you know, do all the other right things to reach that kingdom.
Oh, wow.
And so, yeah, for me as a kid, it was always like people would tell me like, wow, your dad is such a good man. I know one day he will become a member. There was just always so much emphasis on him. And even like by the time I reached middle school, there was a boy that I had a crush on, and he texted me and was like, I heard your dad's not a member. Is that true? And I remember just saying, yeah, like, why are you asking? And then after that, like, we really kind of stopped talking. So it was a really big deal. Like in my community, I felt like people looked at us a little bit differently. My mom was always like very, like people would think she was so strong for bringing just like, for bringing us alone.
Yeah.
So lots of comments about that.
So they never, your mom never ever thought like, I'm going to get, like, she never got enough pressure to where she was like, I'm out, or I'm going to divorce him, or I'm going to leave him. She was just kind of like, cause it feels like a very much a double life. Like, how do you seriously commit to this ideology, but still be with this person that's completely conflicting the ideology?
Yeah.
Did she ever have a chance or time where she was like, I'm out, or this is it, or God doesn't love me?
Eventually, yes. And yeah. So.
Oh no, right now I lost her. So while she tries to get back on, I'm gonna, oh, there she goes.
I don't know what happened.
All good, you're back.
Yeah, so eventually that did happen with my mom. That was a little bit later. I was gonna say another big thing that really impacted me, especially when I was really little, was when I was 7, my little brother passed away in his sleep.
Oh no, I am so sorry. From what?
From SIDS, he passed away. He was 7 months. And so that was a really big deal, a big event in my childhood that made me, like, I dealt a lot with fear, a lot of anxiety, so much pressure on my chest. Like every night I would go to bed and, I would always just, I remember even like that became a way that I would really cope with that loss, was looking at Mormonism through a lens of, if I do these things right, then I will get to see him again. Because it was so much put pressure on us that was like we would be told, you know, families are forever, but families are only forever if your family looks this certain way and your parents are sealed in the temple. So that became a big, just a big source of anxiety for me, because I didn't know how we were all going to make it together, kind of thing.
Jeez. So did your, I can ask this. Did your parents stay together, or are they?
Yes.
Okay. So is your mom still a practicing Mormon?
She's not.
Oh, but snap. So she had a revelation too.
Mm-hmm. And,
who came first? You or her?
It was her first.
Okay.
But that was the only time I remember as a child, we took a break from church for a little bit after he passed away.
Oh man, that's intense. I am so sorry. That's crazy. So that act was the one thing that kind of shook her to the point where she was like, I need to reevaluate things. Did the church handle it well?
No.
What did they say?
From my point of view, they didn't. I felt like the church was in some ways pretty cold. Like I remember my little sister, when she was 5 in primary class, and there was a little boy named Cooper in her class. And that was my brother's name. And she cried about it, and her primary teacher literally told her, well, you better get over it. There's other people named Cooper out there.
Oh, wow.
So I feel like it was a cold response. And as I've spent a lot of time thinking, I think a lot of that comes from just, if you look at God, and I'm not saying every Mormon does this, but I think it's pretty common. If you look at God through a formula, like I do this and then it equals this, it can come up where people really almost think that you did something wrong to have something happen.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, yeah, there was definitely some people that were really compassionate and really well with it. But as a majority, as a whole, I think it caused a lot of distress. Like some of my siblings were told that, you know, we wouldn't get to see him because we weren't all going to go to heaven together. So there was just a lot of anxiety.
Man, there are so many things that even just I guess I wonder, because when I was studying this, like, I don't know if people know this, but when I was starting to study religion, I didn't like just jump into Christianity. It's not like my family was Christian and they taught me or whatever. It was more so, let me study everything, what's out there, and see what's up. And so when I landed on Mormonism, you know, it was, and I don't like, I don't want to like talk crap. I'm not like a Christian talking crap about Mormonism, but like things that were hard to believe or at least trust it. And I laugh because I feel like people who don't know Christians or don't know Christianity think the same thing. Like, you want us to believe in a God who came down, lived among you for 33 years, died, went back to heaven, and he's coming back at some point. Like, I would be like, yeah, that's a weird story. But, you know, the origin story of Mormonism, Joseph Smith being led by God to these golden plates. Those plates are how he wrote the Book of Mormon. But actually,
he could translate them.
He was the only one. No one else was allowed to do it. And he spent most of his time looking at seer stones inside of a hat. And also, you know, translating it, getting permission from the angel and God to translate it, which happened to be into English. And at the same time, I was weary about like holding his past against him, because he did have a sketch past as far as like, you know, a lot of criminal charges were brought against him from, like, you know, claiming that he can find gold and, like, you know, like a bunch of bank fraud, treason. Like, there was a lot of things that he was, you know, hemmed up for. But again, like, the Bible's full of men of God who have done crazy things.
Yes.
Absolutely. Even though, you know, this is more recent, there are things that I would think about, like, okay, these plates are this. And I remember reading about how heavy they would have been. And then I started thinking, well, how this guy carried these heavy plates, like, that nobody else could carry down this hill, and then translated them through a magical, like, ain't, like, it just was very hard to believe. But again, I wasn't going to be critical in that way.
Yes.
Because I knew that my religion was also something that would be hard to believe for a normal person in a real sense, because these things, I allowed them to stop me from getting interested in this religion. But for you, what was the moment, the tangible moment, that made you think, oh, this may not be it?
Honestly, it wasn't until, so I was about, I think I was a freshman in high school, and my mom, she only told us older girls. She said, you know, it was mostly about the history of the early church. I have really been finding out things about the church, and I'm not okay with them. And a lot of it was just about Joseph Smith. After he had founded the church, he had, I believe it was 40 wives.
They say the church claims 40. Other people say he was more at like 44.
Yeah, I think 44 is what I was looking at in my
research. Some hella young, some like 14 years old. Yeah.
14. Some it's even predicted to be younger. And so that was mostly for her, was just that realization, because growing up in the Mormon church, especially when I was little, you look at like Joseph Smith is a hero. Like, he restored this church. You're told every other church is an abomination before the face of God.
Wow.
That is like the doctrine. So
that's probably why they go so hardcore when it comes to evangelism.
Yes, because they believe, and even, you know, baptisms for the dead. Like I did baptisms for the dead when I was 12, two different times. They believe you have to be baptized as Mormon to receive salvation.
Wow. And baptized by the dead, meaning actual dead people, you baptize them?
So what you do, I mean, I can explain it a little bit. You go to the temple, and to go to the temple, you have to get a temple recommend. So you have to have done everything on that recommend to get into the temple. So they'll ask you, you know, even when I was a youth, I think they did ask me if I paid 10% of my earnings, which was, you know, babysitting money. Mm-hmm. But they ask you, you know, like, do you lie? Do you follow the Ten Commandments? Do you have any other beliefs that are contrary to the church? And you have to say yes to everything to get in. But when I did baptisms for the dead, so I think the one time I did it, it was like 15 different people. But you all wear this like white, like dress robe kind of thing. And you go in and you just are supposed to take on the persona of that person who's dead. So they'll read a name, you get dunked, you come back out, you get back in line and you do it again.
Wow.
And you know, you're told like that is, you're doing something that's bringing you closer to God because you're helping somebody else get saved, essentially.
Okay. So the baptism was able to happen post, even if you didn't get, which I guess is kind of, it's weird, but at the same time, thanks for the grace, Joseph Smith. That's a grace for the dead. Yes. Brianna wants to know, what did they teach you and how young about marriage and dating?
Yeah. So pretty young. when I was 10 was the first time. So I believe I was in fifth grade that they really talked to us about the importance of temple marriage and having a husband who is temple worthy and just how important that is before God to have that. And when I was 12, I remember I still have it. It's a little time capsule that they had us do about like, what are 10 different temples you want to get married in? Like, what do you want your husband to look like? What do you want him to be like? So there was a lot of pressure put on pretty young about the importance of temple marriage.
Did they now, because, you know, and I don't want to, I'm not casting a wide net or being accusatory, but in studying the religion, a lot was mentioned about grooming people young and older, I guess you would call them, I don't know, saints or elders, grooming people young. Was polygamy, because it was back then, like we talked about, mm-hmm. Joseph Smith, in your church, was polygamy a thing or was it not?
So polygamy is not allowed in the mainstream Mormon church. And the reason they'll say why, and I remember I didn't really hear about why until I got into high school and was taking seminary. But they say like, we follow the law. And so that was kind of the reasoning for why they stepped away from it is because they say we uphold the law. So I think that's part of the big reason why they stopped practicing it, just because it's against the law. And there's so much history of the Mormon church, like almost being at war with the government.
Well, it was literally why Joseph Smith ended up getting killed. From what I remember, he was there was a local newspaper that started accusing him of like not following the things that he was saying and that the polygamy was wrong. And he ended up turning himself in to the cops. And it was when he was in jail that there was a mob that mobbed the jail and killed him and his brother. Like that's what I read in the historical. I don't know how, you know, true that is, but I could see, why they would be so against polygamy right now. Did you ever feel pressured by anyone like that? Because 10 kind of feels young to be talking about marriage. Did it ever get like weird? Like, or was it pretty much, hey, you know, just what you said, marry a good dude from our religion?
I think it was more of just like, it has to be, for me now looking back on it, it's because it's just so ingrained in your head that is necessary to receive, I guess, what you call salvation, which to them is the highest kingdom of heaven.
Right.
And it's just necessary. You need it to get there. So they really talk about it pretty young.
Got you. And then like how fresh off the boat are you from, like, how is it recent?
So I left. So I kind of had, so after I was telling you about how in my about my freshman year of high school, my mom told us she was taking a break. And I think this is such an interesting reaction for me where I'm at now. But when she said she was taking a break, I was distraught. Like I was crying. I mean, you feel like Mormons really like it feels like a loss if somebody walks away from the church because you don't think there's anything that can save you outside of the church. And even if you look at the doctrines of what they believe about what, like when people walk away, is pretty intense. And so my response was like, I was distraught. I cried. I wrote her a letter. I was like, you're making a mistake. And I had so much cognitive dissonance. I mean, I was only about 14 or 15. But I had so much cognitive dissonance because what she was saying about Joseph Smith, I couldn't believe. Because, like, from the time I was little, I've been taught that he was a prophet of God who God chose to restore the church. You know, you really saw him as like getting martyred. Like, when he was killed, it was because he was bringing this truth that the rest of the world didn't want. And so he was murdered for it. But I didn't see, I couldn't understand like that he, that couldn't have been like noble reasons essentially. And so I kind of after that point spent one foot in, kind of one foot out of the church. Like I would still sometimes, especially once I got my license in high school, would still go, especially to young women's. So it took a really long time for me to kind of leave, and that wasn't until I was about to start my senior year of high school, that I just stopped going to church, to the Mormon church. And at that point, I knew there was a God, but I didn't know who God was.
And how old are you now?
23.
23. So, what did you end up doing for college? Did you go to college? Did you?
I did. Yeah.
Okay.
So I graduated in this past May.
Oh, snap. So, what did you end up going for? Because obviously, I guess that was a big decision too. Because what would you have gone to if you were still in Mormonism? Like they have their own.
I mean, if I would have had gone through all of high school, a really devout Mormon, I probably would eventually had gone on a mission because that's also really highly applauded. And I mean, for guys, it's really is kind of a requirement. Like, it would be super shameful if a guy didn't go. For a girl, it'd be more like you're seen with a little bit more praise, but not necessarily required for a girl. But my life heading into my senior year took a complete, like, absolutely just turn.
Really? What happened? Don't leave me on the edge of my seat.
Like I was saying, I was still kind of one foot in the church, one foot kind of out of the church. So I was still going to young women's on Sundays. I was still going to girls' camp, which was probably my favorite part of being Mormon. Super fun. You just go to a camp with a bunch of teen girls. And so that summer, I was 17, right before I'd started my senior year. I came back from young women's camp, and my mom had told me, your dad is in the hospital, or he's been in the hospital. We don't know what's wrong with him, but he had high enough blood pressure to be stroke level. And so I feel like God really used, I feel like I really got pulled out with the trauma of that year of what happened with my dad's health. Because the last Mormon event I went to, I got pulled out early. It was right before I started my senior year, and it was kind of a little youth retreat. There was girls and guys there, and my mom came and picked me up early because something with my dad. And so I feel like God was really just kind of slowly pulling me out. And so it was like that entire summer, I was told multiple times, like by the doctor, you should prepare for your dad to die.
Oh, man.
And they didn't know what was going on with him. But we were told he's going to die. And it's a very long story, but he had type 1 diabetes and it went undiagnosed.
Oh,
And
wow.
so it was just like that year, I feel like I stopped going to church because it was like, I felt like my world kind of crumbled in a way. Like, I was heading into my senior year. I felt like I couldn't leave for school because I was too afraid to leave with my dad. And everything just kind of crumbled for me. I didn't know who God was. I just so much of like my dad losing so much weight. Like I think he lost 20 pounds in a month, something like that. So I was slowly watching him starve. And one of the mornings, my sister came and shook me out of my sleep to help me move him because he had passed out and we were waiting for the ER. And it was in that process of helping move him that I remembered memories of waking up to my mom screaming with my brother when he had died. So I was there. And so I was just dealing with so much post-traumatic stuff. And it was impacting my sleep. And I was just having crippling anxiety and panic attacks. And I felt like I still had to be perfect because the Mormon church teaches that you can be perfect. You know, that verse where it talks about like be perfect as your father.
Yeah.
Is perfect. Yeah. And so I was like trying to be perfect at school. I was running, I was getting stuff for scholarships and I was just doing everything I could, but everything was failing me. Like I was like, I don't know how to do all of this. And I was just so broken down throughout that year. And it felt like God was, I was looking at him through a glassy window and I just couldn't see him.
Yeah. Like, Georgette was asking if you left with your whole family. It sounds like you already talked about your mom and your dad, but what about all your siblings? Were they on the same wave as you were? Did they easily exit or were they kind of like hanging on as well?
They all my family has walked away. So none of them are still in the church. And I think a lot of it just had to do with how much pain there was involved of things we were told after my brother died and just how much anxiety there was of feeling like we're never going to make it. So I feel like it was pretty easy for everyone to kind of transition. Out.
It's so interesting because I'm listening to you talk and I'm like, I've had all these thoughts. I've spoken to so many Christians who had the same thoughts of this feeling of not being enough or not being able to accomplish enough. I mean, bruh, it's the story from the Israelites, you know, from starting with 632 laws and then dwindling them down to 10. And then, you know, Christ saying, if you only did these two, you'd be good to go. It's, mm-hmm. it's like a reoccurring theme, that this idea that you can do it on your own or somehow you can achieve it by works seems like an impossibility. It doesn't matter what religion you're in. Cause what your story feels like my story, like for real. Cause I didn't think there was at some point I was like, man, the Christianity that I'm being taught is, I don't want to say it's inaccurate, but there was more of an emphasis placed on what you did and that being the reason why or why not God would love you. Mm-hmm. And for me, I was like, look, either we believe in grace or not. Like, I get that your actions will show it, like what you believe, but it doesn't mean that I can lean on my actions to prove God's love. Like he either loves me and the grace is real and he died for all the sins or he didn't. Cause this whole, yeah. I can lose it if I trust in him and but I don't do the right things. Just didn't, it seemed contradictory. Cause I'm like, so then you're saying that at some point in my attempt, cause I used to think, oh, if I'm driving home and I, you know, I just slept with this girl and I'm driving home and if I die, I'm going to hell because I sinned or, you know, I did this bad thing and I'm driving. If I die tonight and I didn't say I'm sorry, I'm going to hell. Like there was always this overwhelming pressure of having to be good enough. And when I started like deconstructing all of my faith, I started realizing, man, it's really, really not about how good I am. It's about whether or not I trust how good he is and was and continues to be. Because that has to be. I always tell Jesus all the time, if it's up to me, if you're leaving this up to me, then I should quit right now.
Yeah.
Because I try every day, but every day humanity gets a hold of me. Every day. So it's like, it's easy for me to hear a story like this and be like, yeah, bro, grace. I'm not even mad at the whole baptizing the dead. I'm like, that kind of sounds like grace. I get that it's probably not, I don't know where that's in the Bible or anything, but I think the idea, you know, I'm more like, yeah, I would like for people to get another chance, even if they're dead. Like, because I just think about me and I think I would want all the opportunity to receive God in heaven. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
But moving forward, are you where are you at now currently? Because I know you said you're still trying to find, you're finding faith. It's obviously being redefined every day. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. I would say, I mean, I feel like I know Jesus personally. And there was a definitive moment for me where I was able to see that, which was right after I had graduated high school. I seriously like did not think I had any future or any plan. Like I had turned down, I had opportunities for track scholarships, and I just had so much panic and so much anxiety about leaving home that I just threw them away.
Oh man.
And so I remember I literally wrote in my journal, I was like, I don't know. Like, I don't think I really have a future. And there was a girl, and like, we were never like super close friends, but she invited me to a Christian church camp. And I feel like that was such a God thing because I went to that. And it was such an experience where I feel like I was actually able to touch Jesus and to see Jesus. And for me, what it was hearing the song Reckless Love, where I was able to see like, wow, like God, I didn't even know the Bible story of like, leave like the sheep and leaving for the one, like, cause yeah. I leaving the Mormon church, like knew no scripture, like seriously, no scripture
right.
at all. And, so I like, didn't even know that story, but like, I could just feel God saying like, this is you, like I came after you and I love you. And you're trying to literally climb this ladder and meet me up here. But I've been like with you at the very bottom of that ladder. Like yeah. I've just been with you as you've tried to slowly go up this ladder. And I feel like literally the veil, like literally tore for me, where I was able to see like, God loves me in my most broken place. And I'm trying so hard to just climb this ladder to see him, but he climbed down for me.
Yeah.
And I was just like, and I was a mess. Like I was in tears, and I just feel like that was where I really saw the glass like crumble, come
yeah.
down.
Yeah.
Like I could feel Jesus just touching me personally.
That's and crazy, because that's where I got saved too.
Really?
At a church camp. Yeah. But I yeah. literally saw Jesus. Like I was fresh off of being a thug, and I'm at a church camp and the Spirit of God falls into place. Like everybody was face down. Like nobody in the foyer, no band. There was no band continuing to play, like nothing. Everyone was face down, just bawling.
Yeah.
And I was too. Now, mind you, I'm not saved at this point. So in my mind, I'm like, what the fuck is this? Like, I'm just like, this is fucking crazy. Like, I'm just cussing all over the place. But my mouth kept saying, I'm not worthy, I'm not worthy, I'm dirty, I'm dirty, I'm not worthy, I'm not worthy. That's what I'm saying. So I'm just having two different dialogues happening at the same time. And then out of nowhere, I see the feet. Now, I didn't see the face, but I saw the feet of Jesus. Like I knew it was Jesus, even though I haven't even accepted him yet. It was wow. crazy. I wasn't saved, so I didn't know to fabricate the story. Nothing in me thought, oh, me seeing this vision is going to make me cool in Christian circles. I was literally like, holy shit, I'm seeing a guy walking through this. And all I can say is, I'm not worthy. I'm dirty. I'm dirty. Okay. It wasn't until after that that I was like, oh my gosh, like it was him. And never been the same since. That was my moment. Just like, and it's funny that it's camp. I'll never make fun of church camp ever, even though it's so, even though it can get weird, I will never make fun of church camp.
Yeah. I mean, it was amazing. I really also like a big thing for me, in Mormonism, Jesus is not fully God and fully man. He's only man.
Mm-hmm.
And so just being able, like, I feel like that veil tore for me so well, because I was able to see Jesus as fully God and fully man. And that made me understand that God was love, because Jesus' life was a perfect life of love, like love poured out continuously. And even on the cross, like that was the ultimate act of love. And I don't, it just became tangible for me.
Sure.
Because before that, it was like, I think I said earlier, but Mormons really do believe love is conditional. And like, I went and like looked that up earlier because I was like, was that just my experience? Did I make that up? But no, it really is like, they believe that you, it's kind of like how much you put into it is how much you get out, sort of thing. Or even the concept of whenever you sin, like they believe God literally withdraws his presence from you.
Oh, wow.
And so, yeah, those are two things I've struggled with so much, even after becoming a Christian, of knowing like God doesn't leave me, even when I mess up. Like, he's not just like, okay, you messed up, I'm out, you're unclean, I can't be near you.
You know what I realized, which may help you moving forward? Whenever Christianity starts getting harder, I know I'm doing it wrong. And I know that's going to like piss off a lot of fundamentalists, but when it starts feeling harder, that's when I know I am 100% in the wrong, because it means I'm trying to do it all on my strength. Like I'm trying to be good enough. Recently in my journey, I've realized, man, is it really this good? Can I really just walk around, accept God's love for me, and that be enough? Now, I'm not out here wilding. I believe the Bible and the stories and all these things that they're trying to teach us is very much something that will help you live a life that's at its best form with the least amount of bad things or struggles happening to you. Like, there's wisdom in the scriptures that it's like, bruh, if you can follow this stuff, it doesn't mean that you're, you know, all of a sudden now you're saved more than anyone else, but there's so much wisdom that it's like, you'll probably be better off. Like, your life will probably be better. Anytime I follow scriptural stuff, my life is better. But I really genuinely think he is enough.
Yeah.
I don't have to know more scripture than other people. I don't, like, I'm so glad Jesus say, yo, if it's just these two things, love God and love your neighbor, then the whole story, the whole commandments, all of it is wrapped up into those two things.
I know.
And I feel like he did that specifically because he knew, yo, my people are going to have, they did back then and they will forever, this inner battle of, I need to be good enough. And I think it's hilarious that those two commandments have everything to do compared to all the other commandments that were so like, you can't eat pork, you got to observe the Sabbath, you can't do this, you can't do that. These were things that were external. Love people, which has nothing to do with you, and love God, which has nothing to do with you. It has,
it's internal.
Yeah, it has everything to do with just heart. Like, focus on loving people. And I mean, because the word even teaches that, like, how will they know that you love him? They'll know by how you love one another. It'll always be displayed that way because God is invisible. So we can't, like, showing up to church is like a lame way of people saying, oh, they love God. No, loving God is loving your neighbor. Show up to church every day, but then talk crap about your neighbor. Bruh, you ain't, like, that doesn't show that you love God to me. It really is more of a horizontal thing. Like, if I see people loving one another, then I start thinking, oh, damn, they love Jesus. Like, for real. Because they're loving people that are not easily loved. So, let me ask you something. Are you getting
an internal process? It really is. And that's where, you know, that transformation takes place of, like, any time, you know, I accidentally fall back into certain ways of thinking, which for me is more like anxiety of like, oh, God has, I feel like I've done a lot better, but like after my dad passed away in 2020, and after he passed away, I so intensely, like the first thing in my brain was, what did I do wrong? Like, I have sinned and this is my punishment. And it was so intense. And I had been a Christian for 2 years, and I still like so intensely believe that it was my fault. And it was so intense of God having to be like, no, like, I love you. I'm not punishing you. And I just had to like learned to trust him so much that he, and I even, it was so bad. Even I was like, I've sinned so bad. Like, you have withdrawn your presence from me. Like, mm. I truly believed that. And it was horrible.
Yeah.
And I feel like God has done so much work on me to help me realize, like, I never withdraw my presence from you. I'm always loving you. And that just makes me see the world in a completely different light.
I love that. Are you dating anybody?
I'm married.
Oh, shoot. You're married. Wait, but is your husband, what is your husband?
So my husband is Catholic. Okay. Which is a whole not like fun thing.
Sure. Wait, is he a practicing Catholic, or is he like you coming out of the tradition of Catholicism and more following?
So he is practicing. He is actually, it's really fun for me to get to see, because for him, you know, I think it's fun for him too, because so we'll actually, I'll go to mass with him on Sundays, and then I've been going to a non-denominational church. So we kind of switch off every other week. And, you know, I'll ask him like, why do you do that? Why do you do that? You know, like for me, it's the freedom now that I can ask questions is amazing. And it's really sweet to see, because there can be people who do external things, but they're internally, like, they're doing it for a good reason.
Right. So yeah.
That's really sweet.
And Catholicism is that. It's like, there's a lot of beautiful traditions that they hold, you know?
There is. There's a lot of, like, beautiful symbolism. And, you know, it's just fun for me to learn. Like, mm-hmm. I'm just in a season right now of learning other faith traditions. And for me, the biggest thing of, like, what's at the heart? Like, why are you doing what you're doing? And if your heart is, you are trying just to come to Jesus and have him poured into you, then that's all it is, you know?
Right.
So yeah, it's been a really good thing. I feel like for me, it's been really good for us to, like, certain theological conversations. There's been a lot of healing for me. 'Cause sometimes if we talk about something, I'm like, I don't know why, but this conversation is making me really anxious. And so there's been a lot of healing, even as like, okay, let's stop. This is what I'm meaning by when I'm saying this. And so he's really gentle with that too.
How long have you been married?
Just since June.
Shoot. So y'all are like new, fresh. Oh yes. Man. Congratulations. June, what is that? Thank you. It's almost a year.
Yeah.
Oh bro. That's so beautiful. I love that. And that's, I mean, you know, I used to think, you know, old Manny would have been like, oh, unequally yoked. And then new Manny is like, nah, bruh. Like, I don't even know. I don't know how many times that scripture has been misused. Like, I think the fact that I look in my life and believers that I went to Bible college with, more than 50% of them are all divorced.
Wow.
I'm like, I don't know if I believe that anymore. Like, I think it meant something different. I really do. I think it, as a married person and as watching a lot of married people around me, it really is more so personality, way you argue, like super, like very boring things that will determine whether a marriage works or not. Because I've seen the most quote unquote on fire believers turn into freaking psychos and the dirtiest divorces. And it's because they don't know how to argue. They don't know how to talk about sex, and they don't know how to handle money. Like, these are the top reasons why it's causing so much stress and things in their life. So I'm very much like, I would now give advice to somebody who's a believer and maybe interested in somebody who's not, I will approach them in a more practical sense, not in a spiritual sense, which before I used to be like, oh my gosh, that's unequally yoked. That's not God. And now I'm more like, how does she handle her checking account? Like, what is he, how does he save? Is he investing? Like, real basic stuff. Because I'm like, those will be way more accurate determining factors on whether your marriage is going to work than whether or not you're ex-Mormon, current Catholic-ish, you know? Your mindsets of what you're talking about, his gentleness, your inquisitiveness, those are like super healthy. Those are super healthy, because most people will be like, well, let me prove the other person wrong and show them why my way is the best way. So kudos to you guys for making it.
Thanks.
That's so awesome. Thanks so much for like joining me. I'm so grateful that you would share your story. It means the world. It wasn't that bad, right? You're good.
No. Yeah. It felt super quick, because it's always like, there's so many like very intricate parts of my story that like looking back now I can see of like, oh, that was a huge thing. And it could take forever to get through those things, you know? So I'm like, the time went by super quick.
Yeah, no. And I love it. I think I'm gonna link your Instagram and all that stuff. I think when both people love Jesus and love people, y'all are equally yoked. Oh, thanks, Brianna. I'm gonna put your stuff, your information down, because I'm really curious as to other people. Maybe there's other, you know, current Mormons. I don't know if they'll ever venture onto this. Hopefully there was an air and a spirit of like kindness towards Mormonism. Like, I don't think I heard anything from you that felt malicious, and I don't think, but you know, let us know in the comments if you felt like we were trashing Mormonism. I don't think we were.
Yeah, I hope not. That's not my intent.
No, and I don't think, feel that at all. I felt like you're just very much telling your story and processing out of it. And not once have you condemned anyone else for being a Mormon. So like we said in our pre-talk, there are beautiful people that are Mormons, super kind, super nice. And I would never like trash a whole religion. You know, everybody is...
God loves everyone.
Yeah, so, and from your story,
after everyone.
From your story, you know, Christian, Mormon, same exact thoughts, same exact feelings towards God and Jesus. So it's very much, I think, if we allow this to really resonate, it would be that we're all really going through the same things and trying to find the same exact love from a God that's already offered it, but most of us are trying to earn it. And that's really, really, I think, the key of what I learned here with you and with me. It's like, it doesn't matter the religion. It matters more so that we understand that there's a gracious and amazing God that loves you beyond you. And I think that's amazing. So thanks so much, McKenna. Thanks for everybody who came on to the live. I appreciate it. And if you're watching us on YouTube, hit the likey and the bell and the subscribey, because that, you know, does the algorithm good. So please do all that. And we completely appreciate it. And like we always like to say, we pray you find a seat at the table. But if you don't, you are always welcome at ours. Cheers.